Where is it? You get it from.
Judges, may it please the court, my name is Elliot Wixer and I represent the plaintiff appellant David Jakes, Robin O'Grady, and Etendevu, Inc. The issues which are fully set forth in the brief that we've presented for review before this court today are three issues. Issue number one is whether, as a matter of law, Libertyville Ordinance 99-0-56 of the Village of Libertyville is an ex post facto law as applied to massage establishments doing business in the Village of Libertyville, and more precisely, the appellant plaintiff.
Could you clarify one factual issue for me, which is on what date, if ever, this establishment actually shut down altogether?
It's a factual issue that the business never completely shut down from. It's still in operation as we speak.
Okay, because there was a letter that was written in October from the chief of police requesting it to shut down, but was it at that time you began to invoke review rights of various kinds?
That is correct, Judge.
So it continued to operate through the review process.
That is very true and accurate statement as reflected in the record. It did have a temporary stoppage of work after the enactment of the ordinance. And I think that what the record indicates and what has been argued is that that is for two bases. One was a zoning compliance issue, and the other was this massage establishment ordinance. It was a very temporary interruption, but it's a true fact that is reflected in the record that they continue to operate to this day.
Okay.
So what are you seeking by way of relief?
By way of relief, what we are asking for is we are asking a reversal of Judge Shader's grant.
No, really, what do you want?
We would like this ordinance, the Village of Ordinance, the Libertyville Ordinance, declared unconstitutional only as applied against my client.
But are you complying with it now?
We are not in compliance, and as it stands,
why are you still open? I don't get that.
We are still open because we cannot comply within the time frame given to us under that ordinance.
Well, I know, but I don't understand. If you're violating the ordinance, why are you still open?
We're still open because, as a practical matter, the village has not enforced it precisely against us, albeit what there is a fact that's not contained in the record, they have issued a citation against this establishment and the owner since the appeal has been pending.
But to get to right to the nub of your ex post facto argument, it strikes me as frivolous because nobody is imposing criminal liability on your clients for any actions taken prior to any effective date of this ordinance that you choose.
It is
only being criminalized to the misdemeanor level for matters after the effective date of the ordinance, and indeed you haven't even been prosecuted for it. So I just, under Calder against Bull and everything else forward, I don't see how you could possibly make an ex post facto argument.
I'd like to answer that question like this and say that I think in our brief, and I think Judge Shader struggled with this issue too, in our brief we analogized this particular ex post facto issue as a square peg in a round hole. We admitted readily.
No, what you're really complaining about is some sort of regulatory taking.
That's correct, Judge, and what we have done.
I mean, that's the body of doctrine that is unrelated to the ex post facto.
Judge, that is correct. And I think that what we have done.
So why don't you argue that? You're in the wrong legal pigeonhole.
Judge, I agree precisely with you. And as a matter of fact, what we have done today, in accordance with Rule 28 of the Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure and Circuit Rule 28, we have indicated three other cases that we are relying on. Taylor versus Hayes, 264 Northeast 2nd, 814, First District Illinois Appellate Court case, 1970. Miller versus the Department of Professional Regulation, 658 Northeast 2nd, 523, a Second District 1995 case, and Berger versus Board of Psychologist Examiners, 521 F. 2nd, 1056, a District of Columbia Circuit Court case, 1975. And Judge Posner, I believe that you are correct. And when I say it's a square peg in a round hole, maybe more precisely, it is a constitutional violation and a due process violation. In our complaint, we've alleged in count one a due process.
No, a taking.
Taking
without just compensation. That's what you're complaining about.
That is correct.
They're preventing you from operating.
That's correct.
But the problem with your takings claim, to follow up on this, if there is one, is that you didn't present it. There's a whole different body of doctrine, a whole different set of rules, various issues about what kinds of remedies the state affords you if there's allegedly been a regulatory taking. This is a big area, and if you didn't rely on that, at this point I would say you've waived it.
Judge, and I would agree with you, but I'd like to focus more so on the three cases that we presented today.
It's a little late in the day to do that.
But I think that there is, in the record, we have said, and respectfully I agree with Judge Posner, perhaps that it is a taking case, but beyond that, it is also a due process case. And under due process cases that we have now, that I have cited before the court this morning, those three cases talk in terms of licensing of people who were performing their profession, if you will, on one day. The next day, the village or the governing body passed legislation saying, you are no longer allowed to conduct business unless you meet certain criteria.
But listen, you are essentially arguing that the Constitution always requires grandfathering of professional competency requirements. And I don't see why it does. I mean, there was a time that lawyers didn't have to have licenses. There was probably a time that doctors didn't have to. And I don't know that the Constitution requires us to allow people who are, for whatever reason, deemed by the legislature adequate, unqualified, to continue working. Sometimes there is a grandfather clause, but why does it have to be there?
Judge, and the grandfather clause does not mean that this village does not have the right to regulate this.
Well, that's the point. I mean, if you agree that the village has the right to regulate the qualifications of people who perform massage services, then that's what the village has done. It wants certain courses completed, it wants certain memberships, whatever. I mean, it's specified in the ordinance. And there, if it's a new rule, there has to be a day when the new rule begins, and there is in this ordinance.
And I agree. The cases that we have relied on do not say that a grandfather clause means that the person subject to the new ordinance must not ever comply, but what it means is there must be an ample opportunity for that particular person to comply.
Well, do you have any authority for that proposition?
I'm sorry, Judge?
Do you have any authority for that proposition?
That proposition, in the three cases, and I don't want to cite them again, but the three cases...
In your brief.
Well, not in the brief, Judge, but factually speaking, we have raised this issue throughout, from the beginning of the complaint to the motion for summary judgment, and even if the exact precise issue number two presented for review, did this plaintiff, appellant, did they have a reasonable opportunity to comply?
But by now,
they've had months to comply.
They have had months to comply, but keep in mind that when this particular ordinance was passed, that there was a whole...
Let's just talk about now, though. They've had months to comply. Why haven't they?
Well, their application was denied months ago based on those facts, those reasons, the absolute things that they could not do to comply within that time frame. By way of example, in October when the chief...
No, now though, this is January.
That's correct, but back, they have already denied the application, as the record reveals, back in October of 2000, and if you look at the ordinance itself, there are 600 hours, just one instance of where they must comply. One of the things they must do is take 600 hours of classroom time. And from October until April, when they denied the application, the if you did the math just roughly, it would be 90 days at 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that means they'd be out of business for a period of 90 days. And so my suggestion is, I agree that they have had time to comply, but what has been done has already been done. And beyond that, what the cases don't really look forward. They look at the ordinance and say, on the face of the ordinance, is there sufficient time to allow a person who was once practicing this profession, this art, to now comply? And if it doesn't, under the cases that we have cited, that is an a violation of due process. You have an established property right in your ability to do business. One of the cases that we cited, Taylor versus Hayes, was a psychologist who lost, it was 1970 money, but $8,000 to $10,000 a year, and the court said, look, that profession and that money is a due process violation. You cannot do that without allowing this psychologist a reasonable opportunity to comply or come within somehow this regulation. And that is precisely this issue that we've raised before this court. I see that I've run out of time.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Reilly?
May it please this court, Your Honors, my name is John O'Reilly. I represent the defendant appellee, the Village of Libertyville, in this case. As I've just heard, this court has aptly pointed out some of the waiver issues in this case. As Judge Shader pointed out in his memorandum and opinion, which I believe is very extensive on this issue, the plaintiff in this case, Détente des Vues, they filed their complaint before they filed an application. They were told by the Village of Libertyville that they would have some time to comply with these ordinance requirements, yet they filed a complaint anyway. They filed a complaint based on 1983, which they've since waived that issue. They filed a complaint based on due process argument, which they've since waived that issue. The due process argument never appeared anywhere in the motion for summary judgment before Judge Shader in this case. That argument is waived. It doesn't appear anywhere in their appellate briefs. The first time any trier of law in this case has ever been able to see the due process argument laid out before him is in a argument today based upon supplemental authorities that was sent to me late last night. Those due process arguments are waived. Furthermore, those due process arguments aren't even applicable to this case. I don't want to take more of this court's time than necessary. I believe that the court is on point with this case. By way of edification to you, Judge Wood, the village has taken a position with all of its members or people that have opened up businesses to try to allow them every opportunity to comply. And with regard to Détente des Vues, they've done the same. They have pursued issuing citations under the ordinance to them since then, but they do have other fish to fry, and that's why perhaps maybe they haven't been shut down to this date, but that has always been felt their right to do so at any time. With that, I'm going to leave this opinion to the court.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument, Reynolds versus City of Chicago, Mr. Horwitz.